This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Safia Bolle of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Looking forward to this interview, Richard.
Along with Leandi Streeter, a business coach and guide from Race Corp.
Welcome. Thank you, Richard.
Last week, we spoke to global shaper Musidi Mudisi, founder and curator of the Global Shapers Stellenbosch Hub, about her recent trip to Shanghai and some of the lessons learnt in that excursion. Today, though, we're going to be dealing with an interesting subject. It's something that I've actually posed as a question more than a topic. Innovation, a critical asset in your business to help you scale and grow, or is it just a fad? Joining us in studio today, Greg Sarandos. Welcome, Greg.
It's good to be here.
Greg spent the last 2 years in Silicon Valley working with startups on messaging and go-to-market strategies. He's now back in South Africa working with local technology and disruptive companies on their marketing strategy. So, again, looking forward to hearing from you. And then Wendy Mahoney is with us on the line. Wendy, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Wendy is an innovation specialist, strategy consultant, an author, board member, a speaker, an entrepreneur. Wendy, sounds like you've got quite a full bag there.
It's a hazard. It's a work hazard.
Great. So, you know, when I posed this question, you know, I thought to myself, you know, just as in days of old, you used to say, I have assets in my business. I have buildings and plant and machinery. I have my people. And we used to call these the resources to make our business operate. Is innovation now joining the collection of resources that a business should be thinking about in terms of the resources that it should be using to go to market and actually grow and scale the business? So that's what we're going to be chatting about today. Perhaps maybe the first place to start is, so what's actually involved in getting a good go-to-market strategy for disruptive high-tech startups and high-growth sort of businesses? Greg, give us some insights here. You've got some great experience in this space.
I think go-to-market strategy starts with one of three objectives. One is to generate leads. The second is to engage in with the market audience. And the third is to help close deals. So things you can do to generate leads include social media marketing, email marketing, attending and participating in industry events, and one or two other things. Once the lead comes in, the potential customer comes into your funnel, you have between 10 seconds and 27 months, depending on the context of your business, to actually move them into the sales cycle and grab their attention. That's where messaging comes into play. So the kind of things you do to engage with a banking customer, which could take 27 months to close, is marketing education, thought leadership, maybe some public relations and providing expertise to the market. And then you get into closing deals. Kind of things that a company can do to close deals include case studies or use cases, product brochures, closing mechanisms on your website, sales decks, and product information. But getting that balance between lead generation, audience engagement, and closing deals is quite tricky. Because if you bring in too many leads into the funnel, but you don't have the infrastructure to close the deals or to deliver the service, then you end up getting yourself into a little bit of a quandarium. And that's why the balance is so important.
Mm. Now, where does innovation feature in, you know, across these three elements that you're talking?
Well, in the Silicon Valley context, innovation means just disruption and originality. And everybody in, you know, San Francisco and Silicon Valley believes that they're being innovative and they believe they're being disruptive. In reality, 87% of Silicon Valley firms fail and 13% succeed. So everybody wants to be the next Uber, the next Airbnb, the next, you know, Apple going back a couple of generations.
Yeah, I guess you only hear this about the 13% success ones, and there's just so many of them. It sounds like everybody's a success.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, for me, you know, I mean, as you talk about those different elements, the three different elements, the one thing that strikes me is, you know, an innovative solution to how you manage parts of that, let's call it the funnel, and, and how it moves, is quite critical. And then there's also the part of me that goes, okay, so somebody else may have innovated. I mean, I recently discovered good old pipe drive in my own business. Yeah, I noticed you're a big fan of pipe drive as well when I looked on your profiles. Just by the way, so there's the, you know, years ago, if you wanted to interview somebody on radio, you'd have to ask them to send you their profile. Now I just go to LinkedIn and look at your profile. I don't even have to ask you permission. Right. I just go and have a look.
Right.
But as I was engaging with pipe drive around CRM and lead solution for our business, the one thing that struck me is somebody else innovated, and I just effectively now, from a commoditized perspective, use PipeDrive, and it's now a product.
Right.
And for me now, I make my payment every month, and I'm able to use somebody else's innovation inside my own business. So, you know, in my world, I kind of sat back and went, okay, so am I innovative in my use of, you know, let's call it technology around how my business operates? And if I go back to how my business was, say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where I didn't use this piece of technology, you can say, hey, I went looking for a solution, you know, I was innovating internally in my own world, going, okay, I need better processes and systems and all the likes. But I didn't have to be innovative. I just had to know how to find an opportunity. And in fact, I didn't find the opportunity. My business partner, Grant, happened to do look at an article with a review of various packages and went, hey, let's try this. I had looked at something else, and he looked at PipeDrive and said, hey, let's look at this. I like the, you know, this and that, and these were the various things. And I looked at it and went, it's a nice innovative solution, addresses my needs. So I've now got, let's call it the innovation that's happened somewhere else, and I've basically bought it and put it into my company, and I basically pay for it on a charge on a credit card. Moving on. So for me, that almost, let's call it the world of innovation and almost adoption of innovation, you can now actually split it into, you know, into chunks. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily have to create it. I can just use it, using somebody else's innovative approach. And I can tell you now, there are many people out there who are still managing their lead flow on Excel spreadsheets and pieces of paper. So as a business owner, I guess I am using an innovative solution. Am I being innovative? No, I'm just using the resources that are available to me. How do you almost, like, let's call it, lead that innovation space? Or do you need to lead that innovation space? Or do you just have to be a really good implementer of everybody else's great ideas, I guess, is the question.
Well, the easy answer is being a great implementer of other people's ideas is a better way to make money and create a successful business. If you're first to market, if you ask the question, I look at a lot of business plans from an investment point of view all the time. They say, we don't have competitors. I say, oh dear. And then I run out of there as quickly as I can. Mm. So the first in the market in virtually every industry is a failed business. Mm. And even Apple, you know, Apple took, borrowed the technology from the park, from Xerox's development lab. Xerox didn't have the implementation capability, the creativity, the vision to implement their own tech. Yeah. I mean, you just find a lot of the technologies, touchscreens, GPS, the whole virtually all the wireless telecommunications was invented not by companies, but by the United States government.
And we all know why that was invented, eh?
Yes. You can see the same with security software coming out of Israel. Yeah, it's the same principle.
The same principle. Now, Wendy, I mean, what is your experience around, you know, let's call it first to market or creator versus, let's call it fast implementer or user from an innovation perspective? What are you seeing out there?
Well, what I'm seeing largely is that there's a large degree of misunderstanding as to what innovation actually is. And look, language is a, most languages are, you know, the label of the social construct. So it depends on your understanding of the definition. So for me, I lecture to third years. I lecture at Business Innovation at Vega, which is a educational brand of the IIE. And in the innovation theory, disruptive innovation is just one type of innovation. So innovation, you've actually got to go right back down to its core, what actually is innovation. So what you were saying as far as the technology that you are utilizing in your business, you are absolutely 100% innovative. And, you know, actually every single one of us is innovative. We're just different types of innovators. And in terms of the different types of innovations that you would see in a business, there's your breakthrough innovation, which is also different to your disruptive innovation. There's incremental. There's outcome-based, which is obviously changing, giving your customer another means to utilize your product or service. There's customer engagement. There's brand innovation, service innovation, product process channel, organizational structure, business model innovation. So those are just some of the types of innovation. And it's not, you know, as Greg was mentioning, a very small amount of innovation actually is completely original. Most of it is utilized that, you know, it's already existing and somehow modified or changed or put into different means or, you know. But innovation at its heart actually is its ideas. It's the inspiration for ideas. It's the generating of ideas, the converting of ideas, and the commercialization of the ideas. So innovation actually, it's not technology, and that's what people think it is. It's a way of thinking, and it's a way of seeing the world. It's an essence. It's ideas. That's what it's creativity. That's what innovation is.
Now, I guess when I think about that, and I think of the world of creativity and you know, just doing things differently. I mean, we all know that's fundamental to a business is, you know, being able to address a need in a different way to meet a, you know, specific market's desire, and you can charge people for it. And hey, there's your business. You know, I always say, you know, got to find something that people are willing to pay for. So, you know, that's the fundamental tenet of how we run our businesses. But once you get into that, or let's call it, you're in that space of, okay, I think I've got an idea that's going to work. I mean, how do you use, or how does one use innovation to, let me call it, scale and grow a business? Because sometimes you have a great idea and a business idea that is very simplistic in its approach and thought, and people are prepared to pay for it, but you can't really scale it all that well. And then somebody else comes along and goes, hey, here's the scaling idea. And they take your – I mean, I always think of that, and I mean, I'm sure many people have seen it and understand it, the what happened with McDonald's. I mean, the guys who created McDonald's, the original pair that created the concept of what McDonald's was about in terms of the burgers and the chips and everything else, they actually never created the franchise. And the franchise was created, I can't remember the guy's name.
Ray Kroc.
But, I mean, you know, you look at this and you go, so great, they figured out, you know, the exact recipe and how to make this burger consistently. He saw this and went, great, now let's make 50 of these things and let's make 100 of these things and let's take this global. They had the idea, okay, the simplistic idea that they could turn into a reality. He took what it was there and just grew it and scaled it. And I'm going, okay, so maybe you don't have innovation as your core starting product, but you're definitely going to need some sort of innovative approach to make it scale and to get the growth that you're looking for globally. I mean, how does one do that practically? Wendy, and then Wendy, your thoughts?
Well, the movie you mentioned, The Founder, is a fantastic movie. So if anybody hasn't watched it, please go watch it. We actually used that movie at Vega and we dissected it for that exact reason. Okay. It's a great example of innovation.
So you're telling us it's set work now. The Founder is actually set work. Okay. Always good to know.
240. There will be, we have 240 hours of network, but yes, no, 100%. That's a fantastic example. So it's the starting point. You know, again, high tech is high risk, high reward, and a lot of people think, ah, the way to go is technology. Let me go high risk, high reward. Let me find the next greatest thing. That's the wrong basis to start from. The first basis to start from is what we always say is ethnographic research, which is observing human behavior. Mm. So go out there and observe human behavior and find out where the gaps in the market are, where the pains, where can you enable, where can you alleviate, you know, which is why innovation is such a human science, because it's based on connection, on empathy. So once you feel the market's pain, you are then able to see where the gaps are. So then what you need to do, your next step is to find out, do you have a market? Is there, and you know, in terms of market, there's either a small number of people who are willing to pay a large amount of money for your product or service, or there's a large number of people who are willing to pay a moderate amount for your product or service. So once you've identified that, then you have a business. And as far as scalability is concerned, you then would look at your business model. So you'd look at the elements of your business model, your resources that you need, et cetera, your channels. And you'd look at that and then determine which partnerships you need, which collaborations do you need to seek out as your starting point before you then devise your business plan and go to market. Because any business owner, any investor is going to look at your 100% correct scalability. You don't have a business unless it's sustainable. And to make a business sustainable, you need to have scalability. You know, that's your long-term growth range. You know, and a lot of businesses in, you know, South Africa, we have a lot of SMEs, and those SMEs are, unfortunately, they're high risk because they're reliant on normally one individual, the entrepreneur. What happens to that individual when anything happens to them? Because they haven't looked at sustainability and, as you say, scalability.
Mm. Okay, so innovation as a, let me call it as an empowerer, is clearly, you know, critical from a scaling perspective. Greg, I mean, from your perspective, how do you actually measure whether you're going to be successful with this approach? You know, hey, I'm going to try an innovative solution here, tech solution, whatever it may be, a process, whatever it may be. How do you know whether this is going to put you in the, what was the percentage, the 80, whatever?
The 13%.
The 13% or the 87%. How do you know whether this is a green light or a big red stoplight?
Well, the easy answer is to refer back to what Wendy said, is high risk, high reward. That's the nature of technology businesses.
Okay.
If you go back to your previous example of customer relationship management systems, pre-Salesforce.com, which is 15 years old, in order to implement a customer CRM system, you would have to buy customer premises equipment. It would cost you millions of dollars. It was very difficult to manage and expensive.
I remember being told by the team from Siebel how critical it was that I spend, I don't know, I can't even remember how many millions of rands in the bank on buying Siebel, so we knew what our customers were doing and had proper CRM solutions. And this is back in the early 2000s. And, we were talking checks with like lots of zeros, eh? Lots of zeros. It took a corporate bank to buy the stuff. I mean, it was serious play.
Right. And then later, 14 years ago, Salesforce.com came along. You might remember their logo, which was the word software with a circle and a slash through it. So they were the first cloud-based. Mm-hmm. Now, they knew that was going to succeed. Mark Benioff worked for Oracle. He worked for Larry Ellison. Larry Ellison funded his business, which is a good sign that you're onto a good thing. So it becomes very predictable. Mm. Fast forward 15 years, you have Salesforce.com. Which is a very expensive system to you know, once you start really utilizing it. And then along comes Pipedrive, to our previous example, which is $12 per user per month. Mm. And it does everything I need, does everything you need for your business. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that is a very, their systems, it's scalable. They offer pretty reasonable service just on using chatbots and you know, kind of online support, and the system works beautifully. That's a pretty predictable one. But to go back to your original question, the reason venture capital investment is so challenging and unpredictable is because they don't know. In most cases, it's hard to know which advertising technology player is going to be the successful one.
Yeah,
and which security company is really going to resonate with customers and be adopted by all the big banks. It's a very challenging thing.
So one of the things that I've experienced working with entrepreneurs that are scaling and growing and trying to create sustainability and who may have something that could potentially offer real value to customers, it might not necessarily be the most disruptive idea or concept, but they certainly do add value, is that challenge between understanding, okay, we have a really great idea, so it's kind of like the operational side, and then going to market. How much do we still need to learn in South Africa about messaging and positioning correctly? And Wendy mentioned the word empathy, understanding mm-hmm. our customers. Because in the past, we used to broadcast. You know, that was sort of the traditional marketing way of doing things. This is who we are. This is what you need to buy. Buy us now. Versus really connecting with the target market and saying, this is the value we offer.
Yeah, no matter what business you're in, you have 30 seconds to capture the imagination of the customer. And you need to address the emotional center of the brain, because people make decisions based on trust, and trust comes from empathy, as Wendy said. Addressing this is the big picture problem we're solving. These are the pain points we're addressing. And not every company is here to change the world, but everybody's there to compete and provide a better service. So in 30 seconds, if they can say, these are the pain points that we're addressing, and this is how we're doing it, then you can have a successful messaging in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's critical to get the messaging right, because then, you know, right customer, right place, right time, right scenario becomes meaningless if you're not expressing your message properly.
Yeah, I think if your value proposition is garbled, you can only have garbage, is a good saying. Let's just talk about that and tying that back to the bottom line. I mean, obviously, we can blow, and I've seen people blow big money in the innovation space. And it kind of, the accountant in me comes out again, and I'm going, okay, return on investment. Okay, so we're now going to do away with the return on investment conversation. We're going to say return on innovation space. Okay, so how do I measure how well this thing's actually performing? I mean, when you give me some ideas, I mean, in terms of, you know, I mean, I guess it's not just about top line revenue generation. How do I measure the value creation from that innovative space? Have you seen anybody do this successfully? And when do they measure and how do they measure, I guess, is a question.
Well, it depends on what the objective for innovating is, you know. So, I mean, that's, again, you go right back down to basics. You know, before even your value proposition, and what is your intent for innovation? Is it customer retention? Well, then you would measure that. Is it bottom line growth? Then you'd measure that. You know, it depends on what you're trying to achieve. And in terms of, again, in terms of technology is just it's a facilitator or an enabler of innovation, unless, of course, you are in a pure technology space itself. What's interesting, though, is, you know, if you think about ourselves, now, we all, values is a massive area of focus. And in my research into innovation, I stumbled across values as a golden thread. And that goes back to, again, you know, a business, when you start up, what is your vision? What is your mission? And that obviously needs to be communicated through your values, which then is your culture, your company, and that's communicated authentically to all stakeholders. Now, in terms of values, going back to profit bottom line, because, again, I mean, I'm extremely results orientated. So in terms of value, if you think about all of us, you know, chatting today, we all have different values. And for those values, we will pay any amount of resources, whether that's, I know, you know, in Joburg, cycling is a massive thing, you know, and people spend crazy money in cycling. For me, I think it's crazy. But if you're passionate about cycling, you have no problem spending that amount of money. You know, I've got a passion for travel, so I'll hop on a plane at the jump of a hat and go overseas, you know. But then I won't spend, you know what I mean, a small amount of something else. So going back to a product or service, the focus is on making sure that you have a product or service of value to somebody in the marketplace, and you are communicating to their values. Once you do that and you're very authentic, you profit automatically as a byproduct. That's why, I mean, in terms of my company, our payoff line is transform, innovate, profit. Because once you transform, which is obviously your starting point to understand what innovation is, putting your mind up to thinking differently, seeing the world differently, you then naturally start to innovate. And then as a byproduct, you will naturally profit, because the product or service is of value and it's in the marketplace that people are wanting it. There's a need for it. You've already reviewed whether there's scalability, whether there's a large number or small number of people, etc. Then revenue will come as a byproduct. That's what I've seen. But as far as innovation, again, it depends on what you're measuring. You know, you could innovate to enable enhanced communication internally within your organization. So you might measure, you know, staff engagement.
Now, Wendy, I just want you to repeat those words of your byline. So transform, innovate.
And profit.
And profit. So that's a really nice tagline. I really, really enjoy that. I like the simplicity, and that's a great tagline.
And thank you. And it's come from a lot of research into, especially for my research content, researching companies that have innovated successfully and companies that have not innovated successfully, and trying to understand why. What is the difference between those two companies? Because at face value, they may be doing everything. There's a lot of theory behind innovation, structures for innovation as far as, human capital structures, actual, bricks and mortar structures, open spaces, collaborations, et cetera. There's a lot that a company can do, and they go, okay, great, we've done everything to innovate, but we're not innovating mm-hmm. successfully. And mm-hmm. what I then identified is that the difference is values. Is there a strong vision and mission? Are there strong values? Is there alignment? Is it being communicated authentically to all stakeholders? And obviously one of those stakeholders is your customer. And are they speaking to the customer's values? Because then money is no issue. And we know this because we will spend money on what we value. We just won't spend money on what we don't value. So people are actually, and it's a growing trend where, especially with the millennials, they're very purpose driven and people are wanting more meaning. So it's a growing trend where money is less of an issue, where it's actually more the focus on what this brand represents, on whether this speaks to, my values, yes or no.
Mm. I think that's just so key in terms of that innovative space, because often we almost look at innovation almost in isolation to the rest of our business, and particularly the values in that space.
Wendy. No, keep going.
No, I was just referring back again to the payoff line, that's all. But what we realize is that a company, before they can truly innovate, they need to take one step back and transform first. They need to transform their minds and understand their dogmas and their belief systems and their meta programs and their models of the world, etc., and understand that they need to see things differently.
Mm. Wendy, some really thought-provoking thoughts there. As we wrap up the show for the first part, and we are going to have you staying on with us for part two of the show, so we're not losing you just yet. Just for part one, I guess the one thing that I'd want perhaps you to answer for us is just, what is the one thing that as an entrepreneur, as you're scaling your business, what is the one core thing that stands out for you as a critical thing that you've got to get right in the innovation space, or you're going to end up as one of those awful statistics in your business? What would that thing be?
From my perspective, we rush to market too quickly. And look, I'm just as guilty. We get a great idea and we run to market. We need to stop and do research. Understand, is there your fantastic product or service that you think is wonderful? Is there a market? Do your research. Understand your market first. Mm. Because once you understand whether there's a need in the marketplace and whether that need is, again, small number who are going to pay a lot of money for your product or service, or large number who are going to pay a moderate amount, and there's no point being a business. But we spend so much, we get so passionate, and we spend so much time and money and resources developing great products and resources and services, and we take them out to market, and then we sit and wait for them to be purchased, and they're not purchased. Why? Because we didn't do our research in the first place. We didn't establish whether there was a need and what the need was and what volume and scalability, etc. So my first advice would be stop research.
Yeah, great. Wendy, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on the show. Greg, thank you for your time. Next up is our practical business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.